This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
Edgar Mitchell died last night. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon, a feat that took place on February 5th, 1971. Poetically and somehow wondrously, he died on the 45th anniversary of his moon landing. But that momentous moment, which included his photographing Alan Shepard, a famous photograph standing next to an American flag, was only the beginning of his journey. On his way back to Earth, he experienced something exceptional. Here it is in his own words.
We'd left the moon, we're on the way home, and my job primarily was with lunar surface activities and the lunar spacecraft to go down to the surface and come out. So when we were on the way home, largely my primary job had been completed, and we were coming home on a well-functioning spacecraft. We still had experiments to do, etc., but it was much more relaxed. And in addition to that, we were rotating every 2 minutes to keep a thermal balance on the spacecraft. It's called the barbecue mode, for example.
So it was like a barbecue pit. Okay.
Right. But what that caused to happen was that the Earth, the Moon, the Sun, and the 360-degree panorama of the stars and the galaxies and the galactic clusters were there, visible in space. The stars and everything are 10 times brighter. There's an order of magnitude more visibility due to the lack of intervening atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So that sight is utterly overwhelming. And what happened was I was looking at that, and I realized from my science training that I was thinking about the molecules of my body and the molecules of my spacecraft and my partners were manufactured in some ancient generation of stars.
Oh, think of that.
And wow, but wait a minute, that's what I learned in college doing my doctoral work, but those were my molecules, and suddenly it became not intellectual but personal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It became a visceral experience. Mm. And accompanied by an ecstasy, a wow. It was a personal connection, and I didn't know what that meant. I had no understanding of that whatsoever. But to jump ahead, it took me several months of research before I discovered in the ancient Sanskrit that that experience was called samadhi. Mm. It was the situation where you see things in their separateness, but you experience them viscerally with bliss in their unity and their connection.
Mm, that's beautiful.
And so it was a pretty wild experience.
Yeah. So it's so interesting that your science led you to the moon, and your science led you to a subjective experience that the ancients would describe maybe more in a mystical tradition.
Yes. As I continued my research, I got all excited by that after I got back. It was so profound that I couldn't let go of it. I had to go find out, what does this mean? What's going on up here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started doing my research, and finally, I found nothing in the science literature.
Nothing?
Well, nothing about consciousness.
Okay.
Consciousness wasn't a subject appropriate for science,
okay.
Certainly not in those days. So I started digging into the mystical literature, not the religious literature, but mystical literature, pre-religious literature. And that's where I found it. Then that really aroused my curiosity, so I started looking in other traditions, other cultures too, other than the Hindu culture. And I eventually began to realize that every culture among their ancient people, the aboriginal people of whatever, their shamans, their medicine men, their mystics, so by whatever name, were reporting these similar types of connectedness with everything. In other words, the mystics of all traditions forever have been saying we're all interconnected in some mysterious way.
Much later, Edgar Mitchell would found IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, where he would explore consciousness and paranormal abilities and events in science. This would make him not only a pioneer in outer space, but in inner space as well. Inspired by his story and the strangeness of his death right on the eve before this program, Fly Us to the Moon, about the paradigm of space travel, Stephanie Slevin and I have composed a song in tribute to Edgar Mitchell. I wrote the lyrics, but she wrote the music, and now we'll perform it for you as a singer for the first time with music by Hassan Khan.
Fly us to the moon, let us roam around the stars. Mine a thousand asteroids and set a base on Mars. When Edgar stood upon the moon, he didn't know his fate. He'd become a pioneer and open up the gates to space inside the human mind, a realm so vast and so divine, a place so filled with godly grace, it could eclipse all outer space. Fly us to the moon, let us roam around the stars, mine a thousand asteroids and set a base on Mars. Launched the ship to head for home, their job at last was done. To stabilize their journey home, the ship needed to be spun. A spectacle with no holds barred, a gorgeous dance of spinning stars. Galaxies, the moon, the earth, invoked in him a strange rebirth. Fly us to the moon, let us roam around the stars. Mine a thousand asteroids and set a base on Mars. Now knew that exploration must go inside to find the key, to find a proper explanation for this state of ecstasy. The cells and atoms of men are one, merged in mind with endless sun. He knew at last he could be free to solve the wondrous mystery. Fly us to the moon, let us roam around the stars. Mine a thousand asteroids and set a base on Mars.
Welcome back to Threshold. Before we begin, I'd like to say a word about the mission of this program, which is to help empower people spiritually to face our personal, business, and political lives. Yes, I believe there is an enhanced spiritual consciousness which can take us to a level where guidance and direction is stunningly available. But this path requires a willingness to abandon separation from a higher level of awareness and to seek within ourselves something higher than our separated sense of selfhood. It's not an easy path. And seeking the truth spiritually, I believe, cannot be separated by seeking for truth in all areas of our lives. And an appetite for truth, as well as a strong sense of conscience, are vital components of a true seeker at a certain point, at a certain moment on the path. I believe that conscience is folded into a true higher consciousness, and so these elements are also folded into this program. A couple of weeks ago, we had a great conversation with Sarah Westall, the founder and host of Business Game Changers on the Conscious Radio Network. Sarah shares with others the alternative media and appropriate sensitivity to what is happening in our country, but also as a specialist in paradigm shifts for better or for worse in technology and business practices, she shares a sense of history and understanding of how technology and business can lead humanity upwards or in a rapid descent to self-destruction. I invited Sarah back for an overview of several exciting topics, all somehow revolving around our mission in space, defining our lives in ways often beyond our personal control and providing clues to what may tangibly affect us with some miraculous technologies and a new vision of the universe. Today, Sarah will help us look at certain aspects of space technology and exploration in a different way. So let us begin. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Glad to be here again.
Sarah, when you look at the effect of conventional space travel on our lives, beginning with Sputnik, from the various trips to the moon, to the tiny robot adventures in our probes to far off planets. Do you think that's really changed our lives tangibly? Hasn't it been more psychologically than physical? I mean, aren't the taxi or train rides we take more tangible to us than we generally think of space travel? I mean, you can't you can't even get rides in Virgin Galactic. Yet for the lucky few, there is Space Adventures, a company which furnishes zero-gravity atmospheric flights, cosmonaut training, orbital space flights, and even spacewalks, but only to a handful of people. What do you think? Not all that different.
Well, actually, I think there has been significant differences. Yeah, we're not able to jump on a shuttle that takes us to Mars yet. And so it's not like getting on an airplane yet. But there's been not only psychological difference, the paradigm of, wow, there's just so much more. We're part of this big galaxy and we can actually travel out there. Got us thinking, got us out of our head a little bit and, you know, new paradigm of what's possible. But just the everyday things that we experience, like satellite television, came from the communications by NASA in the 1960s. So satellites now are used for all sorts of things, military, commercial applications, cell phones. You know, obviously what the NSA and Snowden told us about everybody being watched. I mean, it really does affect us every day. Laptops, if you can believe it, were first developed for space in 1983 for the space shuttle. It was called
really?
The shuttle. Yeah, it was called the shuttle portable onboard computer, Spock. And then other things, they've come up with solar energy advancements. Obviously, they're always looking for ways to harvest energy, which is light, which is can be regenerated. They can't take a whole bunch of fuel up there all the time. They're looking for ways to get energy just from what's around them. And a lot of the advances in solar energy actually came from NASA and the space program. They have developed the silicon-based cells to enable low-cost, highly productive harnessing of solar energy. So a lot of what you see now on the rooftops of buildings and, you know, that have got the commercialization of solar to be just part of our existence. If you're looking at California and a lot of other places, even in the third world countries, I guess they're not all third world countries anymore, but China and parts of Africa, they just build their infrastructure with solar now and different harvesting technologies. So that has really changed us. But even little things, you know, like highway safety, medicine, we all know about freeze-drying technology, right?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
I mean, there's a lot of things that affect our everyday life, which is pretty remarkable. We just don't think about it that way.
Yeah, I understand. So that is really a tangible form of connection, although it's not as direct or as cool as going on a space flight.
Yeah, I mean, we can't get on the shuttle going to Mars tomorrow. You know, we can't make a bus ticket kind of thing, but we're just happening to go to one of the moons of Jupiter. But, you know, SpaceX and some of these commercial companies are working on that. I have an interview coming up that'll air live on Monday with the president of SpaceX, and she talks about that's their goal is to work on getting to other planets and eventually intergalactic travel. It's really cool. I mean, you know, that's an Elon Musk company, and that's their goal. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I noticed over the years that he had a lot of rockets that didn't work, but he's getting much, much better.
Yeah, they have a first in a lot of things. They've been able to take a rocket up to space and bring it back. The first commercial company to do that, they just did that in December. And they've been able to do a lot of things. But their goal is to have spaceships that can take us, you know, to different planets. And they are working on wanting to go to Mars. I mean, that's their goal. And, you know, NASA has spun out what they're doing is they're spinning out the development of the traffic part or the transportation part of it. And they're focusing more on the science and other things. And the military budget's actually bigger than the NASA budget. And so there's a lot of space programs, and I know you want to talk about that more in the show, but these commercial companies, what they've really spun out is the travel part of it. How do we get to there, you know, from Earth and back and make it in a affordable, realistic way? Because right now these rockets that they send out, they throw away. I mean, it's like a one-time use. And so how do we create something that's like an airplane where you land, you use it again, and it can be used for the, you know, relatively for the masses. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be for the masses for a long time, but for a regular person.
It will be for the regular wealthy people for a while.
Well, it'll be for the even the extreme wealthy for a while. or maybe the special people who have special intellectual gifts.
Or they're, you know, celebrities, and it'll make a big flash.
Exactly.
Well, still, in all, putting the physical side of it aside for a second, there's still the entire question about what is produced within us, which has involved, I believe, a significant shift of consciousness that is no doubt a paradigm shift, but one filled with massive contradictory and unnerving sub-paradigms. It's not, I don't know if you even heard of this, Sarah, but a long time ago in the 50s, George Powell produced something called Destination Moon, based on a book by Robert Heinlein. In this, I mean, I was very young when I heard this. I actually had a record of it that I'd play over and over again and pretend I was on one of these sort of acceleration pads where I protect myself from the heavy gravities. But anyway, this rocket takes off despite all kinds of legal and perhaps financial obstacles. The crew faces danger, but makes it to the moon, lands, and come back. Now, we just saw an example of Edgar Mitchell. He landed on the moon, and then he comes back, and he has this mystical experience. And maybe there's even more than that that he and other astronauts experience, because we'll talk about that later. Now, Sarah, with your recent excursion into the idea of a secret space program, because you talked about it recently, and all the things we hear reported by ex-astronauts, UFO witnesses, and renegade scientists and engineers, Is it all that unmysterious and prosaic? Is space really that, you know, like the destination moon, or just Virgin Galactic going somewhere and so forth? Or is it something else?
I still think it's mysterious to us because we haven't been there, right? I guess there's parts of the bottom of the ocean that's pretty mysterious, or the inner core of the Earth that's pretty mysterious, because we just haven't been there. Going to the moon, you know, for the limited amount of time that we went and just the few people that did is makes it still mysterious and remarkable for the average person. Yeah, the trips to outer space, the satellites going up there, all the, you know, probes that are going out to outer space, that's not all that exciting to people anymore. But if we found life, If they actually came forward and said, yeah, there's life and real significant life or advanced life in this solar system or something, that would be incredible for people to hear coming from the authorities, right?
That's true. You know, when I go out here, I'm in American Fork in Utah, and I go out on a snowy morning and I look at these mountains. It's just so awesome and beautiful. And so I didn't really mean that to sort of downsize the value of these spectacles that this world and this plane of reality presents us. But when I think of some of this stuff that's going on with the secret space station, I do think it's sort of mysterious, perhaps not in the happiest way. You know, it's sort of a strange thing.
Well,
should I say, maybe I should call it weirdness.
Well, it's weird and it's strange whenever there's a lot of activity that isn't transparent to us. When there's billions of dollars spent on things that we don't know about, and then we feel that it's being kept secret for whatever reason, then our minds start to wonder, and you know, we're paying for it, so we should wonder. We should wonder what the heck they're doing. And you know, I'm not a fan of huge parts of our budget being secret, not being able to tell us what they're spending the money on. I just don't think that's right. I understand defense and I understand military, you know, our need to protect ourselves. I just don't understand spending billions and billions of dollars and keeping it from the American people. I mean, there has to be a way to make this more transparent. But there is just too much credible evidence of what's going on. People have, too many high-level people have come forward and said they've seen things. I mean, President Carter said he saw a UFO. Reagan said he saw one. The government of France has come out and said that this stuff is real. Russia's way more open about it. Other countries are open about it. We're not. And it's quite strange how, you know, some countries are coming out and talking about it. But so there's just too much credible evidence pointing to this stuff being real. You know, and you listen to high-level military people talking about their experiences, things that they've seen. You know, the abduction stories are quite amazing. You know, I haven't been abducted. Actually, part of me wants to be, because it's like, it would be nice to have some kind of experience. But
you might have an experience you don't like. Listen, Sarah,
we
do have to take a break for a second. And I pause on that exciting note because we're going to talk about all kinds of things like that in a few moments. Meanwhile, for a while, as we head to the break, we're going to divert ourselves by another way of looking at moon flights, which is somewhat germane from our subject. We wrote a little song called Fly Us to the Moon, but let's hear the original song that most people remember now from Wall Street, the movie. But this is sung by Patricia Welch, who produced a 46-song 3-CD called Great Entertainment, Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia. This is Johnny Blue Star. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welch for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for Great Entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy
purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who is a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
We're back with Sarah Westall discussing the mysteries of space travel. Just going back to the moon landing, I wanted to just mention that even the moon landing is suspect. There's been a long time debate among a small number of people saying that the moon landing was completely faked. There's another group of people that say it wasn't totally faked, but a lot of it was faked because they wanted to hide the technology that might be hidden from what we're going to talk about in a few minutes, the private space program. That might be hid there, plus maybe relics of earlier civilizations on the moon. So it's a pretty strange story that even something that seemed to all of us so obvious, like they flew to the moon and they were heroes, could be in a debate. Isn't that strange, Sarah?
Well, I think that's the whole point. Anytime that you make things secret, then it creates this wonder and people's minds can wonder and it creates conspiracy theories and all sorts of things. That's the problem with keeping things secret. I don't think the actual moon landing was staged, but it could be based on, you know, things that I've seen is that the pictures and the photos were staged.
And there could be components of it might have been staged.
Yeah, certain components of the pictures could have been. And
like
I don't
they were hiding the flying saucers.
Well, yeah, I don't know. There could be all sorts of reasons why. You know, they needed good PR photos, obviously, because they spent all this money. And it could be pretty risky to just rely on the astronauts taking in space with all the things that are going on. And they didn't know what could possibly happen. So they wanted to probably make sure the PR was right. But anytime you do things in secrecy, it creates issues. And that's what they're doing. You know, it creates issues.
You know, recently you did a program, which we were actually referring to before, but this was a program with Danny Rist, who calls himself the dark journalist, about the so-called secret space program, which we're kind of discussing, but haven't really explained too much to those who might not have heard about it. It involves the claim that there's a breakaway civilization fostered by various suggested types of alien contact in which certain human beings have already obtained faster-than-light propulsion. The recent premiere of the X-Files reopened. Did you see that, Sarah, yet?
I did, and I liked the first two. I didn't like that third episode.
Oh, you did see the first one, right?
I seen all three of them, yes.
Well, the recent premiere of that suggested that many aspects of the UFO experience, including sightings and abductions, have been perpetuated by a very sinister breakaway civilization. In fact, some of the speculators about a real-world culture of this type claim the origin of the Nazi survivors of the war who had been indulging very advanced space technology. The idea of a secret space program and other features of so-called UFO experience and even science fiction have certainly impacted on our idea of space travel. How did this concept of this secret space program first get into the public mind? Sarah?
Well, I think there's numerous facets to this. I mean, first of all, the understanding of science and technology by the people who study it and have gotten pretty advanced with it compared to the people who are the everyday, you know, average person, it's a gulf. I mean, there's a huge difference in understanding of certain things by, you know, people who study science and people who don't. And as time goes by, that gulf is becoming more and more. But on top of that, there's the money gulf, you know, the 1%, the elites, we call them. It's even less than 1%. There's this incredible separation now of people who have, you know, the people who have a ton of money and the people who don't. And then the government doing all sorts of things that are off the books, you know, spying on us, which we all know is happening. But also all the things that are going on, you know, with the collapse of the 2008, the collapse of the market. And we know that a lot of money was funneled out off the books. Just a lot of things that are going on that is not transparent. And so you just know that there's something going on. And with the fact that NASA has been pretty much turned into more of a science-based program, and the military side of the space program is so much larger, and they never talk about it. So we have no idea what's going on in that. It just gets back to that lack of transparency creates this idea that there's this breakaway civilization. And there's a lot of truth to that, just based on the gap of understanding there is between, you know, the highly educated and the non-educated.
Well, we're going to celebrate Stanley Kubrick's venture for Right or Wrong with an original composition by my friend and Russian composer Edgar Arens called Space Odyssey. Just a short one, and then we'll go into the commercial break. With Russian composer Edgar Arens for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point with television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying, whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070.
We're back with Sarah Westall, who has a program called The Business Game Changers on the Conscious Radio Network, and we're discussing the Secret Space space program and its economics, which are kind of very, very challenging to understand. Could you go into that a bit, Sarah?
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit. The Secret Space program first isn't quite really on aliens and UFOs. They really separate themselves, and what they're really looking at is what's actually going on in space by the governments in the world. And and so there, you know, there's a few camps out there. There's the UFO, people think that the UFOs that everyone is seeing, like the Phoenix Lights, where thousands of people saw it, are really the military's inventions and the military's programs. And there's a big camp out there that think that there really isn't anything extraterrestrial. It's just stuff that we're doing. And then there's another camp that thinks that UFOs are really alien beings from other solar systems and dimensions, right? And you know there's a big camp of that. And then there's another camp of just it's a combination of the two. But their goal is to really bring in credible evidence, because if you don't, if you don't try to bring in the most credible evidence, and things have to be documented, you have to have credible sources of information, you need to have real serious people doing, you know, the reporting and the research. Otherwise, it just can't be taken seriously, right? And so that's their goal, is to be just more professional about this and then take this to more of it. Because we know things are going on. What is going on? And to try to understand it. And, you know, with as far as the economics goes, there's, you know, the Federal Reserve, which we know is, we don't really know what's going on at the Federal Reserve because it's only been
audited. It's hard if you don't audit something to know what's going on.
Yeah, there's no way to know. It's only been audited once. But there's another thing that's even more secretive, which is the exchange Stabilization Fund, which has never been audited since it's been created. It was created in the 1930s with, I have some notes on exactly what year it was created. I can't remember, 1934 or something like that. And it was created to bring stability to the dollar. And when all the gold was confiscated, that was what was backing it. And the only person that has right to oversee it is the Secretary of the Treasury. And they actually work out of the New York Fed. And so basically the Federal Reserve takes direction from this Exchange Stabilization Fund. But it's never been audited and there's no oversight. So it's really odd what is going on. They do put out reports of what, you know, some of what has been funded. And when you look at some of that stuff, it's not just for the stabilization of the dollar, unless you really expand what the stabilization of the dollar is, which is a lot of military.
Expand it into space.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, well, I think a lot of that stuff is even really dark. You know, what is really going on? I mean, how much of the Pentagon's budget? Yeah, how much of the Pentagon's budget is really used in space? There was this good 60 Minutes episode where they showed some of the things that the military is doing in space, and they have the different orbits, the outer orbit of the Earth they control, and they use that for security surveillance and to be able to control any weapon that might hit our country. And so there's just a lot going on that we don't know about. And it was a pretty interesting episode. But you know, the scariest thing really are nuclear weapons. Those are Those are extremely scary because the probability as time goes on that at some point they'll be used is almost a certainty. Because the more hands that nuclear weapons get into and the more time that passes, it becomes an absolute certainty that it'll be used somewhere. And that's why expanding to other planets and underground bases and ways to protect the human race is important.
Well, another thing that you haven't, maybe we mentioned it before, there was that $2 trillion that was missing the day before 9/11 that Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld mentioned to the public.
Well, that's just crazy. I mean, all the different branches of the government have significant funds that are just missing. And so, you know, where's that going? What's going on there? And well, you can't audit, like, the housing department. There's more funds missing from there than almost any organization, and you can't audit it. They won't let you do a real, you know, there's been organizations that have tried to get in there and audit it for real, and they just, it's just pretty much a quagmire and a joke. And it shouldn't, it's sad because that, you know, I can get pretty angry when it comes to taxes, and so I want this to be an uplifting show, but it's just wrong. It's just wrong for our taxes to be spent in ways that we have no idea. It's just wrong.
It's sort of undemocratic, I would say, to the least.
It's wrong.
I would like to play a little clip here of somebody who's in sort of the other camp about the secret space program, Richard C. Hoagland, who's famous for his development of the concept and book called Monuments of Mars, The Face on Mars. And I'd like you to hear something about his answer to the question, which impinges on all of us about maybe even the secret space program. Why did we give up the moon?
Because what we have now been looking at are photographs, data returned from several different types of missions over several different years, from 1966 through 1972, the Surveyor, the Lunar Orbiter, and the Apollo missions. And on each of these separate technologies, with different lighting, different geometry, different technologies themselves, we have found and corroborated what we're going to show you in the next few hours. We have found, apparently, the real moon, the moon that perhaps only a few inside NASA have ever really seen. Have you ever wondered why it is a quarter of a century this week since Apollo 10 went to the moon, we haven't been back? Have you wondered why the only return mission in all that time was a military mission lofted a few months ago by the Pentagon? And why you've heard almost nothing about it?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question, isn't it, Sarah?
Well, you know, Eisenhower originally decided that space exploration should not be given to the Pentagon. They actually had debates about this, and the different branches of the government were trying to figure out who should have control of it. And they decided at that time under Eisenhower that it should be given to a civilian open agency, and they called it NASA, and that it should be given to the people because space exploration should be for everyone. But what has happened since then is that it is shifted to military control, which is what they wanted originally. So over time, the powers of having it be under military control has won. And NASA focuses more on, you know, exploration out to different planets and the science. And military is focusing on the military part. And so what I think happened, and what just seems really clear, is the moon is being used as a military, you know, part of the military. And it makes sense. It's a base that they can use that's close to the Earth that they can use as, you know, it makes sense that the military would take that over. Whereas NASA, you can go out to Mars, you can go out to these other things. But we need to control this space so that we can watch what's going on Earth and everywhere else. I mean, they own the outer the ring around the Earth, the outer orbit. Orbit. I should know that word. They own the outer orbit. You know, the military does. It makes sense that they're going to want the moon as well. As far as there being all sorts of alien things going on there and sorts, if there is the ability for advanced life to travel this far, which we can talk about later, because I don't think we're that far off from being able to do it ourselves, I wouldn't see why they wouldn't want to land on the moon and check it out. It makes sense. But as far as, you know, us abandoning it, I don't think we have abandoned. I just think it's been taken over by the military.
Well, let's take a break for a second and then come back and finish out this hour with some interesting discussion about that point.
If you like Threshold Radio, a program which deals with core issues affecting our personal, political, and spiritual lives, and advocates the creation of an enlightened, informed citizenry, not only in America, but throughout the world, then you might think of supporting both your product and business and our message by advertising on our show. All programs are archived and are supported in various ways, including social media, our outreach being broadcast weekly on VegasAllNetRadio.com, a very advanced internet broadcasting station, but also archived directly on our websites on YouTube and in SoundCloud. We believe in time we will have a very broad outreach. Through New Galaxy Enterprises, our parent company, we can create a wide range of marketing and advertising components to complement your advertising on Threshold Radio and increase your outreach in many creative and exciting ways. If interested, just go to www.thresholdradio.com and fill out a contact form with your interest. That's www.thresholdradio.com.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects, like book covers, logos, web design elements, with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com. For artist, illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here, there's too many of them!" Again, as other Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
Hi, it's Johnny Blue Star back with Sarah Westall talking about the secret space program. And, it could be the military. I don't know what you think of Mr. Hoagland. Are you acquainted with him at all?
Well, I've seen some of his stuff. I don't know what I think. I've seen those pictures, and some of it seems like there's a lot of imagination that goes into it. Right?
It's hard to tell, you know. I mean, especially since what we will get into in the next part of the show, we'll get into a little bit more about the claims that he's making about a code or codes involved in some of these, the relationship between archaeological structures. And then we're going to go into another interpretation of all that. It's very hard to tell from the outside. I have to say, I do sense something about that face. That face is really strange.
Well,
but, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not natural. I don't know the answer to that either, you know. But I do find his claims very intriguing. We're going to be discussing more about the paradigm of space and about possibly forms of intervention and secrecy that are a bit more exotic and may or may not have, substance. But we do know this, Sarah, don't we, that there are literally thousands of sightings of UFOs.
Yes, there's thousands of it. In fact, we even found the NBC was recording a football game. And, you know, one of the things is that we can't see everything. Our human eyes are limited and we can't see things that are going too fast. So there's probably things that are going on all the time around us that we just can't see. But NBC was recording a football game and they saw a UFO go across the sky and it was recorded and you can slow it down. It was on the Huffington Post. Incredible. It looked like a little saucer.